HRNradio.com, where positive people and podcasts unite.
This is Dr. Margaret McCraw. You're listening to Business Life Works with HealthyLife.net. And today we are talking about the business world and communication, a topic that we've talked about previously. Now, one of the things I want to mention to you is some statistics that I got from our guest from her website, Carol Blackman. We'll be bringing her on in just a moment with us. She had some wonderful statistics that we are going to be discussing with her today. Of the 7 billion people in the world, 6 billion have access to a cell phone. Text messages in the U.S. exploded from 14 billion in 2000 to 188 billion in 2010. Smartphone owners send and receive an average of 4,000 messages per month per individual. Can you imagine 4,000 messages per month? I'm not sure if I'm in that statistic, but I might be. I do text a lot. So what does this tell us? It tells us that interpersonal communication is on a severe decline. And we are bringing Carol on to speak with us today to talk about what can be done to reverse this trend and to create a social atmosphere where emotional intelligence can flourish. Journalist Carol Blackman says that there are lessons to be learned from the 1960s peace and love era. We need to create an atmosphere where the lost art of real personal communications and connections can flourish. Blackman, who studied at San Francisco State University at the height of the peace and love era, we're talking the 1960s, folks, says the mantra, do your own thing, is needed more than ever in personal relationships and business today. Carol Blackman is a newspaper reporter, author, and speaker, and she is the author of several nonfiction books, including the upcoming book entitled Truth and Love, Finding the Soul of the 60s. Carol, are you with us?
I am. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to this interview today and having a wonderful discussion about this. Very interesting topic. And I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, we just need to think and put some intention around our communication and our connections and really make some decisions about how to bring in more in-depth, personal, one-on-one, face-to-face relationships.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's something that really we knew something about in the 1960s. You know, many people thought of San Francisco in the 1960s, and especially the hippies that they would have seen on television, as being just silly and not really having an impact. But when I started looking at research because of this book that I'm writing, I found that it was really very interesting to look at the way that people related to one another, including the protests and all the fuss that we made at the time. But the fact is that we had a priority to do face-to-face communications. And, of course, we know that's very different today.
Yeah, yeah. And we didn't have quite the options back then, obviously.
No. Well, one of the things that is interesting, though, is the hippies, or the flower children, were expressing themselves as counterculture, counter to the 1950s kind of corporate organizational man, gray suit and everybody doing what everybody else did.
Right.
They had a more gentle ideology, and it emphasized peace and love and personal freedom. Well, that set of concepts led to a lot of things that we have assimilated today, things that we think are normal, so to speak, cultural diversity, Eastern philosophy, meditation and yoga, health food, and even our cyberspace revolution. The freedom to think outside the box, so to speak, was something that allowed that particular idea to flourish. Mm-hmm. And I think that the 1960s had a lot to do with how we have expected to be a certain way, and that includes being able to use all these devices and do our own thing, so to speak.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So let's kind of bring in the whole concept of emotional intelligence. That's a term that's been very big in the business world for quite a while. And I know that you feel, at least I understand you feel strongly that emotional intelligence is very important. So what do you have to say about emotional intelligence? And let's define it for our listeners
sure.
before you address that question.
Well, this is not new, as you well know. Something happened in about 1998. A guy named Daniel Goleman wrote about this emotional intelligence concept. And when I started looking at what he had done, I was fascinated by the first couple of paragraphs in his 1998 book. And it says this: at the dawn of the 1970s, at the height of the worldwide student protests against Vietnam, a librarian stationed at the U.S. Information Agency received bad news. A student group was threatening to burn down her library. But the librarian had friends among the group, and her response at first may have seemed a little naive or foolhardy. She brought the Americans living in the country there to listen to the students protesting. In so doing, she was capitalizing on her personal relationship with a handful of student leaders. And in the end, they didn't burn down the library. Now, that sounded an awful lot like what we were talking about with the 1960s, where we had communicated face-to-face, our brains are wired to pick up on body language and visual clues. You know, we sat at family dinners and talked. We practiced those skills that we now call emotional intelligence. And I think that Goleman was really highlighting something that we took for granted. And with this technology boom, a lot of those things have gone away. So I look at emotional intelligence and think of things like self-awareness,
mm-hmm.
self-regulation, managing your internal states, mm-hmm. the motivation that can guide you to whatever goals you have, the feeling of empathy, and that I think is empathy and compassion from the idea of the 1960s,
sure.
and then the social skills. You know, you can't be social without practicing,
mm-hmm.
and that means face-to-face communication. And so when you take that out of the equation, there's less opportunity for especially the young people and the children to learn about what it means to be social because they're not in that social realm. They think they are when they're doing these 4,000 text messages a month, but they're missing a huge piece of the puzzle about not being face-to-face. I was quite surprised because as I've looked at research, there was a Times poll that said 32% of adults prefer to text rather than to go to a personal face-to-face meeting. That was shocking to me.
How many? What percentage?
32%.
32%. Yeah, yeah. I'm not surprised.
And
actually,
when you look at that, you know that again, it what it does is it takes away the personal ability that you have to practice your social skills.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's something we need to pay attention to now.
Well, and I wonder if we shouldn't also, while we pay attention to that, and I'm looking forward again to talking further about this, I'm also wondering if we cannot think and process more about how people can be social, if they can, how they can, build the relationships through some of these other means, because a lot of text messages are brief to the point, a lot of emails. I know people have gotten hurt, feelings hurt, not understanding somebody's email or misinterpreting it because it's a quick message that gets just sent to somebody, and it can sometimes seem abrupt when it, maybe the person never meant anything abrupt. They were just giving quick information. I know once a friend, I sent her an email, and I had written FYI, so for your information, and then da-da-da, and then whatever it was. Well, the content was not was relevant to something that she was interested in. She later told me the FYI seemed so businesslike and abrupt to her that she was offended. And that, to me, was shocking because
right.
I'm just passing something on that
right.
she wanted, that I thought she'd be very interested in, which she was. However, the FYI didn't work for her, and she saw it as like me saying our relationship was a business relationship, which was so not the case, you know? So I wonder, too, I mean, what etiquette is out there, and how can we all get on the same page with understanding, okay, this is etiquette, you know, or this is the way to do it, or this is what this means. I'm wondering if we don't need more of that as well, because it's not going to go away. People like texting, 32%, it's not going away.
No, you're absolutely right, Margaret. I think what we're talking about is a balance here. And I think your idea about what is the etiquette of using these technologies, you know, how does that work? But again, we're not teaching that to anybody. That's not part of the how do you use this equipment. But the other thing I found out was that there is some research going on. The University of Connecticut did a study, and they found that a particular part of our brain gets activated when we send or receive a text message. They were doing some research about why some people can't stop texting while driving, which we know is very dangerous. So in some people, texting releases something called dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter, and we perceive it as a reward for the behavior. So this means that texting can actually be addictive. Realizing that, and your point about it doesn't tell the whole story, I think we still need this real balance between how we're going to use this equipment. There is nothing wrong with it. I mean, in and of itself, it is not a bad thing. But the way we use it and how we use it is important. And to realize that some people go overboard. You didn't with your message. You were asking, you were giving your friend some information, but she perceived it as something that was offensive, which would have been... No, there would have been no reason why you would have thought if she wanted this information, there it was. So we have to realize that there's going to be miscommunication and the fact that in some cases, some people really do get addicted to this, which then pushes them to not want to do that personal relationship the way that they should. So I think there's many aspects to this, and nothing can replace face-to-face interactions if, in fact, that's what you're talking about, being clear, your body language, how you talk to somebody, smile, your eyes, all of those things. People for generations have been used to picking up on those messages, and those just get erased when you don't have the ability to be face-to-face communication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's fascinating. I do know, you know, I've talked to people who have been to family gatherings, and the younger ones, meaning 20s or younger, are texting and they're each other and they're in the same room.
Yes.
They're not even talking to one another. They're in the same room and they're texting.
Yeah.
And that kind of goes along with the whole addictive thing that you said.
Exactly. I think that that's what we have to realize, that this is changing our brain activity in a particular way. And we have to understand that. It doesn't have to be labeled bad, but you do have to know that that's a possibility. But for the young people, and especially people in business, some of the things that I discovered while looking at this was that companies are now becoming concerned about this whole idea of lack of emotional intelligence. There was a survey done by this one company called TalentSmart, and they found that 90% of their top performers also scored high on emotional intelligence. So emotional intelligence makes a difference in business. Why?
Yes.
Because a lot of business is based on sales. Sales is based on personal relationships. People have to trust you in order to buy something from you.
Yes.
So the whole idea of high emotional intelligence also was tracked because they also surveyed and found that people with this high emotional intelligence score made an average of $29,000 more per year.
Mm-hmm.
So if the young people that we are talking to want to understand why this is important, and if money is important to them, then they have a reason to track this. There was one class that I researched. It was one person scheduled for 2 days, and it cost $2,500. Businesses are now investing in this training because it's personal development of employees for business success.
What training is this again?
It's a personal development for employees. It was just one of the classes that I surveyed, and it was a class about how you can learn emotional intelligence. See, the good news is, and Goldman said this back in 1998, you can learn these skills by practicing them.
Absolutely.
And there are consultants out there, and they are training in business these days to actually teach this, which I have to laugh a little bit about that because, again, back to the 60s, part of what we were trained to do naturally in the 1960s was to have more face-to-face communications, to respect your elders. My grandmother would have called it manners. These kind of the skills are saying please and thank you. These kind of skills are the things that are disappearing with the use of tech. But now what they've discovered is this is really important for day-to-day business opportunities. And so the businesses are actually paying consultants to teach this to them, their employees.
Well, I understand and agree with that. I am an organizational consultant, and
right.
I get calls. I wrote a book called The Relationship Code. We're going to come back. I want to talk about your book. But I do want our listeners to know that one of the things I have learned and one of the things that became very popular in my own trainings with organizations was building relationships. Absolutely.
Yes.
And the whole emotional intelligence and how emotion stems from thoughts and how we can control our thoughts, we can control our emotions. So, no, it's very, very powerful, very exciting, though, because we have the control is in our own hands. We do have
yes.
the ability to control these things.
Yes.
But
absolutely.
It is interesting. I want to put a second, second the other thing you were saying regarding sales. I know my own, I train people to be life coaches and health and wellness practitioners, mentors. And when I train them, Carol, when people are interested in our training, they want to speak to someone. They don't want to text about the training and then pay a fee. They want to know before they pay the fee, the tuition, what they're getting. And they want that connection with the person. And just like you said, if I didn't have people on staff who could connect with a prospective student, we would never enroll students by just texting or emailing. It just wouldn't happen.
That's right.
It's where that trust is built. It's where the trust is built. So we're going to keep talking, but I do want to let our listeners know that you have an up-and-coming book. It's coming soon, and I want to know a little bit more about that, called Truth and Love, Finding the Soul of the 60s. Now, this isn't published yet, correct?
No. That's correct.
When will this be published?
It'll be about a year from now, and it's in time for the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love, which was 1967. So 2017 is 50 years. We had two experiences in San Francisco, one called the Human Being in January and one called the Summer of Love, and that's what people relate to when they think of the 60s. But my stories about the 60s take them way beyond what they saw in the newspaper headlines.
Wonderful. And I know your website addresses some of this as well, doesn't it?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Let's give our listeners your website. Is that the www.moretosayfromss.com, or is there another website?
No, absolutely. If they go to www.moretosayfromss.com, they can sign up for a weekly, I call them postcards, it's a blog post. It has a little blurb about something having to do with the 60s relating to something going on today. And it's just a fun way to look back in history and remember all of the fun things that we experienced, as well as some of the important and poignant things that happened then.
That's a very good point. Now, if they also want to just get in touch with you, they can just contact you via the website. Is that the best way?
They can. There's a contact sheet on there which basically says, send me a message, and you can write your message right there on the website. Click send, and it'll come right to me.
Perfect. Okay, that sounds good. That sounds very good. Now, when you wrote this, when you started writing the book, was that recently, or have you been working on this for quite a while?
I've been working on this for quite a while because, and it was a personal reason. It goes back to personal relationships. I had a professor at San Francisco State who I absolutely met the first day that I was on campus, which was interesting.
Mm.
And he was the reason that I majored in speech communications.
Mm.
And years later, I was a newspaper reporter asked to come back and speak to a media class about what it was like to be a daily newspaper reporter. And I went to find him because I always thought that it would be great fun to have a conversation with him where we could both share memories about what happened in the 1960s. There were some pretty important things that happened then, and we could share those memories. And I found out that he had died in a boating accident.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was shocked, absolutely shocked. So the fact is I was looking for him, wanted to share memories, couldn't share them with him. And then I started talking to friends and friends of friends about where they were. So I've collected more than 50 stories from the people who actually were here in various aspects. And those stories are the book, Truth and Love, Finding the Soul of the Cigar.
Oh, wonderful. I can't wait to get a copy of this. Carol, we're going to take a quick segment break, and we're going to be back with you in just a moment. So I ask my listeners to be with us in just a moment, because we're going to continue interviewing and speaking with Carol Blackman about how to enhance our relationships and our personal communication.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
This is Dr. Margaret McCraw. You're listening to Business Life Works with HealthyLife.net. And today we're speaking with Carol Blackman. She is the author of the upcoming book called Truth and Love, Finding the Soul of the 60s. Carol has also written quite a few other books, which you can learn more about on her website, which is www.moretosayfromsf.com. So, Carol, good to be back with you here on our show. I want to ask you a little bit more. I want to talk a little bit more about emotional intelligence, because it is such a critical concept. And I do believe that the business world has begun to understand it. And you know, the key reason they have come to understand this, as you said earlier, is sales. But the other key reason is staff turnover. They have, they know that staff turnover is one of their biggest expenses. And if they don't get a handle on turnover and turn it into staff retention rather than turnover, and that's all about building relationships, then they're not gonna be doing very well financially.
No, that's absolutely true. I think that some people are saying, well, social media is destroying our interpersonal social skills, and I don't think it has to be that way.
No.
People use it because it is, as you said earlier, convenient, and you can get the job done without going into a whole big discussion. But I do think that people have to look at monitoring themselves and asking themselves if they can put down the devices and do face-to-face. You know, I was interested in some of the popular media is now picking up on this idea, and there have been a few stories. Television news has picked up on how techies have laid down their devices and go on vacations in what they call tech-free zones. So they'll take themselves off into the woods. One story was about cabins in the woods where they're just enjoying nature, and how they are putting down the devices. They're not to use any of those things, and just enjoying themselves. A downtime that's really important, and where they're connecting with others. And in many cases, they also are doing some kind of nonprofit work, a charity, helping a charity do something, which is all important. So I think we're talking about balance here, because we're talking about people who need to understand the need to connect with another person. And some of this idea about emotional intelligence, you have to start with personal self-awareness. How much are you really doing? Can you measure yourself? You know, studies are now coming out about children. There was one the other day that I saw. In fact, it was actually published yesterday, but they were previewing it a little bit. And they said tweens, that's 8-year-olds to 12-year-olds, were spending 6 hours a day on some version of a media device. Mm. And 13 to 18-year-olds were spending 9 hours a day. Well, if you think about when a kid wakes up and goes to school and comes home, that's an amazing amount of time to spend. And those are the kids that are now growing up to be in business and decide how they're going to handle themselves. So I think there's a lot of self-awareness that we can now focus on about how to monitor ourselves and to look at this issue. I think the awareness part is just beginning.
Let me ask you this, and I don't have the answer to this. I don't have children. And so my question is, children who are in high school or junior high school or even elementary school, what are the, generally speaking, what are the school rules around a cell phone? Must they have it turned off? Must they have it put away? What are those rules?
Well, the problem is there are no rules. each school has to deal with this individually. Mm-hmm. So there's no, like, national standard or even when it comes to statewide. There's a group here locally. I happen to know this one guy named Jim Steyer, and he runs something called Common Sense Media. And Common Sense Media measures things like what kids are doing media. And he talks about television shows and movies and all of that kind of other stuff. But he just came out with this study about high tech and what's happening to our tweens, that's the little kids, and teens, which are the older ones. And they are still listening to music. They are still trying to multitask. The part that I find interesting is you can keep the cell phone away or turned off in the classroom setting. And many, many schools have rules about put that away while you're here. But when they're home and they're doing their homework, 60% of the children they surveyed text while homework is being done. So then they have to do something called multitasking, which we all know isn't very successful all the time. When you're trying to think of this and then learn that at the same time, that doesn't always work. So the concern, of course, here is we're not preparing our children for all that they're going to have to face as adults by allowing this kind of behavior to continue without being monitored or having rules in place where you can understand that they really can focus on learning something.
Mm-hmm. Well, the data is mind-boggling in a way, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm saying we're now, I think, as a society, in this awareness stage. People like Jim and other people are doing research to say, hey, pay attention. This is something that's important, and we need to go forward with some kind of plan. But at least they're now beginning to make a dent in the understanding of how these things are being used and how they're controlling us in a lot of ways. If you believe the University of Connecticut study, it's a brain changer, and we need to understand that too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. So when you think of emotional intelligence and you think of specific skills, let's kind of review those skills.
Okay.
For adults or children, whoever, for all of us.
I think the biggest one is building relationships. We're talking about compassionate empathy, building relationships. So you're talking about a person who says something like, tell me something about yourself, rather than focusing on yourself, and then really listening to the person who's talking. So there's a way that emotional intelligence, or you could just call it being empathetic, plays into how you build a relationship with somebody. If you're present with somebody and they look upset, you want to know why. So you're asking that question. I hear you saying, or I'm sorry about, those are kind of the way that you would have a conversation with somebody who's got some issues and you want to take care of that. Having communications with somebody where you can say, oh, that's a great point. What do the others think? That's reaching out to a group of people who have something to say and want to be heard. And listening is a big part of this. I don't think that we spend enough time listening. When I see some of the new television shows these days, people seem to talk over one another. Have you noticed that?
Mm. Yeah.
They don't listen. So I think listening has to be something that we take back as a really important skill.
Yes. We're going to come back to this and finish discussing it. We're going to take a quick segment break. Carol, we'll be back in just a few moments with more discussion about communication and relationship building.
The Bright Side of Talk, HealthyLife.net.
This is Dr. Margaret McCraw. You're listening to Business Life Works on HealthyLife.net. This is the show where we talk about the four-step harmonic matching process to align your thoughts, your emotions, and your belief systems with your desires. Today, we're speaking with Carol Blackman. She is the author of the upcoming book called Truth and Love, Finding the Soul of the 60s. And Carol's website is www.moretosayfromsf.com. moretosayfromsf.com. And you can email Carol through her website. So, Carol,
Carol, before we took the last break, we were talking a little bit about skill sets for emotional intelligence, and I would like to talk a little bit more about that in terms of thoughts and emotions. One of the things I teach my audience is a process that I've written about and have worked with for many years. It's a process to align thoughts, emotions, and belief systems with desires. And so when I ask people what comes first, the thought or emotion, many people really don't know, but it's the thought that comes first, and then the emotion is the response to the thought.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to suggest, and I'd like your opinion, your thoughts on this, but in terms of controlling our emotions, there are still so many people who think they cannot control their emotions. And they think that, you know, a reaction, they don't understand the difference between an emotional reaction versus an emotional response. And I'd like to spend some time talking with you about that. Is this a good topic for you?
Absolutely. Well, Goleman, back to Daniel Goleman, where I started, he basically says that's absolutely the case, that you need to control your emotions first, and it's being aware of your emotions and understanding what that is. Emotions, as you well know, with the training that you're doing with your folks, can control people, and in that case, not have the best result for what they're trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And that's personally as well as professionally. There's a whole idea about happiness, which we haven't discussed, and happiness is something that I think everybody has a goal in their life, is to lead a happy life.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that the 60s presented to all of us, and it was sort of laughed at as being too silly, not something that was valid. But I think that they were onto something, as they say, and being happy is part of what we strive for as human beings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when we're happier, when we're in a feel good place, mm-hmm. then we manage our emotions very differently than when we're not in a feel good place. You know. And I'm thinking about the friend going back to when she had a reaction. And, I mean, it was a reaction. It wasn't a response to me saying, FYI, for your information, in an email.
Right.
She was not in a very good place at that time in her life. She was down. She was, she was clinically depressed and on the antidepressants and just at a low place. And I think when you're in that low place, that's where you can start to misinterpret and react to something rather than respond.
Right. Well, way back when I was studying communications at San Francisco State, we used to talk about something called the map and the territory.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to do with the fact that if we can believe that there's this reality out there, and the reality was what you were trying to communicate, her reaction to it was her mapping of what that was all about. It wasn't your intention. It was what she reacted to. So when we're talking about that, I think it has to do with the person recognizing that they should then have asked a question, perhaps. She came back at you by being offended when she could have said, did you mean? Is that what you meant?
Right.
Because that's clarifying what was going on,
yeah.
And not just assuming. And that's one of the things that I find very interesting about the 60s. We basically said people are going to be different. They're going to do things that are different from what your norm is. Please don't make judgments or assume anything.
Right.
Ask questions.
Right, right. Ask questions. And I think that is so important. We tend to, you know, as individuals, want to surround ourselves with people who support our comfort zone, and rather than the diversity. And even though I think that's certainly emphasized in the workplace, I'm not sure diversity is emphasized in terms of thinking or thought patterns or opinions as much as it is race, culture. And I think we could add in these other aspects because it's so important to be able to have diverse thinking patterns and to have a strong business or a strong relationship. I mean, who wants to be married to a mirror image of yourself? That would
That's
be boring.
Right. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Well, and I think people who are successful are the ones who are more curious and more open to a variety of people and their attitudes and what they're about. Because when you're talking about, for example, the tech boom that we've all experienced, in order for that to flourish, there had to be somebody who said, well, let's try that, not knowing if it was going to succeed. I'm sure there are many, many stories in tech about how something didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But we only hear about the ones that were successful, and those are the ones that we all know about and the ones that we see in the headlines all the time. But I think being curious and open is a quality that we all should foster.
Yes.
Because in your example, she could have cleared up that whole idea that she had, that she really was perceiving what happened to her in a wrong way, that she was actually being helped by you, and your intention was to help her.
Right, right. Instead, after that, of course, I didn't take any more time to send her anything.
Right.
because she reacted so poorly and didn't really give me a chance. So
right.
Not at that point in time, because she was at such a low place, I just felt like she couldn't hear. She couldn't have
right.
a discussion. So I just held back and appreciated what she had to say and moved through it with her and moved on.
Right.
And I think that's the whole thing of discernment, which is a word that I love and I put a lot of emphasis on, because I really think that's part of emotional intelligence and being able to discern. And a lot of people struggle with that.
Yeah. Well, that's why I said I think that the future depends on all of us managing ourselves
mm-hmm.
and handling relationships and to look to the future with something that we can be proud of. And in order to do all of that, the communication between people, countries, the world, has to be improved. And one of the things that we can all strive to do is to make it a priority to focus on discernment and being open and being curious about what the possibilities are.
Right. Well, and again, I think if there are things that people learn, and one of the things I've always been troubled by is that I feel like these skill sets, emotional intelligence, the skill sets aligned with emotional intelligence, need to be taught in school, need to be taught with young children. And I am not seeing that happening. Are you seeing that happening somewhere, Carol?
No. I think the closest that I see is Jim Steyer and his Common Sense Media making parents aware of the various media outlets and capabilities that we have and how they can help their own children. I think that parents have a role that they can play. Very important. And parents need to take responsibility for this, and that's to be understanding what their choices are.
Yes. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the show, Business Life Works. And this is Dr. Margaret McCraw. I look forward to our last segment with Carol and getting some more information. This has been a fascinating discussion. We'll be back in a moment.
Timeless information for your self-care and health. HRNradio.com.
This is Dr. Margaret McCall with Business Life Works, and today I'm speaking with Carol Blackman. Carol has, in the midst of writing a book that will be coming to us in the near future called Truth and Love, Finding the Soul of the 60s. And Carol, I'm going to give our listeners your website again, more to say from sf.com. Great. Carol, and this is our last segment, and I would really like to talk with you a bit more about some of your stories that you're maybe including in your book, the experiences from the 60s that you feel we can learn from and really gain from in today's world.
Great. Well, one of our topics that you and I just discussed was the whole idea of making assumptions and judgments.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the book, as I progress through it, has a lot to do with the betcha didn't know stories,
mm-hmm.
which says we make assumptions and judgments all the time. Perhaps we should back off of that. Let me give you an example. the Black Panthers were the big scary guys with, they would wear black leather jackets, and in some cases there was violence, they carried guns. But they also started 68 community service programs, and one of those programs was a free breakfast for poor children before school. I interviewed a Black Panther woman who was in the San Francisco group, and I asked her, you know, so it's Tuesday, you wake up, you're Black Panther, what do you do? Mm-hmm. And she started telling me about what it was like day to day. Well, one of her jobs was to go pick up these children from some of the poor areas in San Francisco, bring them to a Catholic church basement where the Black Panthers had actually produced their breakfast, and they did this every day, and then take the same kids back and deliver them to their school. And the Black Panthers in their newspaper stated that you can't learn without good nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's something that I don't think anybody would have attributed to the Black Panther Party.
No, no.
But in fact, that was one of those don't make assumptions, find out the truth, and what I've done with this book is the truth. So I think that we've seen, in a lot of ways, the 60s coming back to us with things happening today. I have to ask you, Margaret, did you know that there were a few things women couldn't do in the 60s? For example, you couldn't get a credit card by yourself.
I did know that.
You couldn't serve on a jury.
Mm.
You could not buy a birth control pill. You could not attend an Ivy League school. And you couldn't have equality in the workplace, which we're just getting around to solving. Our Governor Brown here in California just signed an equal work legislation that is a long time in coming, 50 years later. But those were some of the things that you couldn't do. So we are still dealing with some of these issues that people brought up in the 60s. And I think that's fun and funny and important as well.
Mm-hmm.
And my last story to share with you is we had one incredible character who I got to meet once. And his name was Jose Saria, and he was basically a waiter in a bar. And he was a gay man in the 60s, which was illegal, by the way. It was illegal to cross-dress, and that is something that we see on television now. But anyway, it was illegal to cross-dress in the city of San Francisco. In 1965, he was a World War II veteran. He created something called the Imperial Court. They planned, the group planned this grand gala ball where they were all dressed up in fancy clothes, like we see for the opening of the opera or the symphony.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his gown on, and he had to wear a little sign. Everybody had to wear a little sign that said, "I am a boy," on his dress so that he was identified as a male. But this grand ball happened, and he proclaimed himself Empress. And for the next 50 years, and he just passed away recently, but for the next 50 years, he ran this imperial court, which has grown across the country and, in fact, across the world. And these people raise money for charity. And they do performances, they sing, they dance. They're all very talented. And so when you see all of these cross-dressing men performing like this, you might think it's a very silly, not very important activity. They have supported charities for all these years. So
wow.
Those are three stories about Betcha Didn't Know from the 60s.
Those are incredible. They are. Wow. Wow. Carol, what a wonderful conversation we've had today. We are going to need to wrap up with you. Carol Blackman, a wonderful, wonderful individual who has a wealth of information and a wonderful book coming out in the future called Truth and Love, Finding the Soul of the 60s. Again, let me give our listeners your website, www.moretosayfromsf.com. Thank you so much for being with us, Carol.
And thank you for the opportunity.
Yes. I'm going to hang up with you right now, and I'm going to come back. Listeners, come back with me in just a moment. I'm going to wrap up our show.
What makes us different? You. Thanks for listening to HRNradio.com.
Well, this is Dr. Margaret McCraw wrapping up our show today. Thank you so much for being with us. Now, if this time
topic of communication and interpersonal relationships is appealing to you, and you feel that you are somebody who's really good at helping people, if you feel that your friends, your family members, even your colleagues come to you for advice, and if you feel that you are good at solving challenging problems, challenges in life in general, maybe at home or at work, relationship challenges, if you would also like to be your own boss and have your own business, then you may be interested in some of the certification training programs that my company offers, Behavioral Health and Leadership Dynamics. We are a credentialed school, a credentialed training institute that offers accredited programs in life coaching, corporate life coaching, health and wellness, life mentoring, spiritual mentoring, and even relationship consulting. You can give us a call, or you can also go to my website to learn more about our certification training programs. The website is www.BHLDavid.com. Again, that's www.BHLDavid.com. Or just look for me, my name, and you'll go to my website where you can also get the information, margaretmccraw.com. I look forward to being with you next month. We're going to be talking a bit more about how to be successful in the business world and talking about the critical components of being successful when you run your own business. So for now, take good care of yourself, and I look forward to being with you again. Have a wonderful day.